T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hall, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
It's only going to get worse. It goes back to a point that was ridiculous from day one. The Chicago media declaring this guy a franchise quarterback before he ever threw a pass in anger for the Chicago Bears. It's not going to get any better for the Bears with Jay Cutler. Quite frankly, if I'm George McCaskey, if I'm Virginia right now, I am P, fill in the blanks. This is just phase one.
Right.
The finger pointing is bad right now. If they lose in Dallas on Sunday, this becomes the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Mully and Haw, Danny Parkin's kind enough to sit in this morning. He's left the afternoon to get up with us. God bless him. And I believe that's Cubs' fault. We're blaming them for it.
Sure.
But
happy to be here.
Thank you so much, Danny, for doing that. We just heard the voice there of Chet Kopick. Chet Kopick, of course, a pioneer in sports radio, a larger-than-life character, and a man who succumbed to injuries suffered in a car accident down in, was it Georgia or South Carolina?
South Carolina.
Yeah, he was in a hospital, I think, in Georgia. At any rate, horrible to lose Chet. He was a good man and certainly a friend of a lot of us here, and a graduate of Nutrier, where you went. So
yes, that's true.
I don't know how that works. Nutrier has their own radio program, or
yeah, WNTH is a 50-watt radio station up on the fifth floor of the Nutrier East campus.
And is that where you started your career?
It is.
And did you know Chet, or were you aware of him, or were you?
I was aware of him, that he went to Nutrier in high school, and I obviously, you know, I listened to Mac in high school a lot. Mac, you're sure. Going Harry, and he would talk about him, so I knew the impression.
You didn't listen to the Rick Talender show?
No, what that. They lost out on the radio. It was Howard Stern in the morning and Mac, Yurko, and Harry mostly in the afternoon with a little B&B mixed in. But, I knew of the legend of Chet Kopick, but I wasn't, you know, I was born in 86. So Kopick on sports was kind of before my time. But obviously the guy is like you said, he's on the Mount Rushmore of Chicago sports media and a larger than life personality.
I was talking to some friends in the business about it yesterday, and we were kind of recounting some of our favorite stories of Chet and some of the, you know, Chet was, he was a, you know, he was really good to a lot of us. And the first time I was ever on the radio, I was on Kopick on Sports, and he called me Mike Milligan.
Nice.
And it was awesome. I don't even know what I had written. I think I was doing freelance stuff at that point. Or I was covering like all sports, before I started on the Bulls, but, it was very memorable, and you know, got to know Chet over the years. And I mean, he, you know, he'd have the big fur coat on. He was at Bear games all the time. And I remember, you know, kind of walking with him, and he had this thing that he did, which was he would wave. If someone yelled out his name, he wouldn't wave at them. He would wave at the section. He would say, you know, hey, like he would give this greeting to the section. It was hysterical. You know, it was really sad to hear of his passing, and like I said, a lot of us were kind of just talking, telling stories about Chet. It's rough, man. I mean, it's just terrible when you lose someone like that, and he had a huge impact in this town, and a lot of people began their career with Chet. I remember, you know, Brian Hanley was tight with Chet and was on his show quite a bit, and that's how he started at the Score. So there's a lot of people that have stories like that.
Yeah, just from reading and following it yesterday, I got home and my wife had WGN News on, and there's all these Chicago sports figures who
right.
were quoted as talking about how he helped start their careers. And,
right.
you know, his impact was felt, right? I mean, he was on PTI. He made PTI yesterday that he had died. So he had that national resonance. the famous intros, right? The long introductions that he would ahead of guests. I mean, that's something that became a Jim Rome staple, right? He kind of trademarked that in this industry.
I worked at One-on-One Sports, which became Sporting News Radio. And there was a famous thing where Chet was like eating chicken on the air. He was having a piece of chicken, and the producer had to run in and give him the Heimlich.
Oh, man.
And it's like, it was, we would listen to it. And it's, what's unbelievable is like Chet is, so he's like choking on this thing while he was doing the interview. And he, you know, all you could hear is, he's like banging on the table. He couldn't like, and this guy, you hear the producer like, Chet, are you okay? Dustin could tell the story because Dustin worked there as well. And Dustin had a long association with Chet. He worked with Chet. Dustin, you worked with Chet at Sporting News Radio. And then I remember when he was doing his show with Boom Boom Mancini, you would be scheduling guests for him and help me out a little bit. Just unbelievable. I was just telling the story of the choking on the chicken.
Paul Federacy had to run around.
Oh,
Paul Federacy had to run around and knock it out, literally knock it out of him. And it like went shooting.
Heimlich.
Yeah,
it was unbelievable. And then they went to break, and he comes back and he continues the interview. And whoever he was talking to, the guy's like, "Hey, wait a minute, what just happened? Are you okay?" It was one of the fun. We used to play it all the time.
It might have been Bert Sugar.
Was it? Well, God knows he talked to Bert Sugar a lot.
All the time. I worked with Chet and learned from Chet, and not quite to the Danny Mac level, but I spent a lot of time with Chet, and I was really upset yesterday when that all went down.
Yeah,
Chet was great to me. That was a time when I was not working in radio during the whole Webbio era, and the Cubs reporter over at 1000 would get upset with me for booking these guests and say, "Do you know how much prep I got to give Ray Boom Boom Mancini for all these guests you're booking?" I said, "Hey, talk to Chet. You know, Chet writes me a check. I book guests. You're not my boss. Go pound sand. It's got nothing to do with it."
Well, we'll raise a Diet Coke to him today.
Absolutely. It's funny, I cracked one open listening to Mac with Danny yesterday, right when that interview happened, and I did it on purpose. I went to the fridge, I'm in the kitchen listening, and absolutely. Yeah. He used to bring the whole 12-pack in with him.
That's awesome.
Yeah. All right, we're gonna come back with your calls. 312-644-6767 is the telephone number. It's great to have Danny here, and it's Mully and Hall on the Score.
I think there's no pitcher I've ever been around that kind of knows themselves and is accountable to when he's right and when he's not right. And, you know, he knows he's a little bit out of whack. He's been working. And I think in the next couple starts, we're going to see him lock it in. And I think once he does that, I think we'll see, like I said, one of those, you know, 2 month runs where he's totally dominant. But he's not someone that we're worried about even at a little bit.
Mully and Hall, we've got Danny Parkins getting up with us this morning, and that is the voice of Jed Hoyer. He was on the show yesterday, and he was talking about Kyle Hendricks. And Kyle, of course, starts this afternoon, 1:20 start. The pregame begins with our guy Zach Zaidman, the ginger-haired genius, at 12:45 on the Score.
Just listen to the guy sitting right next to you in the studio, Mully.
Ginger hair genius, you understand?
It's good advice.
That's what the guy told you. He told David. And for the first time, David looked at me. Mully's in the studio.
What?
What? I thought that noise coming from over there was somebody else. No, I'm just kidding. But I love Zach. And he always does a really good job of presenting the beginning of the game and explaining what the big storyline is. And today it's Kyle Hendricks. And today it's not just about coming home and stepping up in class a little bit in terms of playing Arizona as opposed to that awful team in Miami. But it's about Kyle Hendricks getting back to what he does best. And I think it's interesting you pointed that out. I didn't really hear what Jed said there about it's going to take him a couple, you know, in the
he just
next
said,
couple
get it
of,
locked in
yes.
over the next few starts.
Yes, that kind of, didn't realize that was coming.
And I have every reason to believe that he will, right? No one knows his mechanics as well as Kyle Hendricks. Or maybe people know it as well, but it's hard to know it better because, like you were talking about earlier, he can't rely on just raw stuff or velocity, right? Yu Darvish really struggles to throw a strike, but in theory, he can still be effective because he can hit 98, 99 when he ramps it up. He sits 95, 96. And there's just a ton of natural movement on all of his pitches. So even if he's wild, right, like that's the term effectively wild.
Sure.
Kyle Hendricks can't really be effectively wild.
Does he have the slowest fastball in Major League Baseball?
I think he did for average velocity last year. I don't know about this year. But I mean, yeah, 87, 88.
He went to Dartmouth, okay?
He's a smart guy.
He's an Ivy Leaguer. And you heard he knows his mechanics better than him. He can outthink you, counselor. And that's one of the things that he will do to you. But when his mechanics aren't right, because he's not hitting anything on the radar, it's like, oh, geez. Oh, my God. Did he just throw a 74-mile-an-hour pitch?
If he hits 88 with the fastball, then he's really feeling it and bringing the juice. You know, that's pretty much where he tops out.
Right. And so if he is off a little bit, it's batting practice out there. But it's after the 2017 season, I remember at the end of the year, John Lester was talking about passing the baton as the staff ace to Kyle Hendricks.
Right.
Right. And all that's happened since is John Lester keeps starting opening days and they get Cole Hamels and they've got a couple of 35-year-olds as the stoppers and the guys that you trust the most. So I do believe that Hendricks will get there. Right. I absolutely believe that Kyle Hendricks has opening day starts in his future. He was third in the Cy Young. He was top two or three in ERA for a year. I mean, he's got great stuff when he's locked in. He's just not locked in right now. Just like Bryant's not locked in at the plate.
Right,
Hendricks isn't locked in on the mound.
It's interesting. I don't know why I think of Greg Maddux when I think of a guy like Kyle Hendricks, but it always comes to mind because he was the man that painted the beautiful portrait. He was an artist when he came out to pitch. And I remember covering a game one time and he had a sensational outing and I was in the locker room and he was standing there and we're waiting for him to talk, but Sports Center came on and they were doing a thing about the legend of Greg Maddux, and Greg Maddux is like looking up, there I am. They're talking about me doing what I just did. And then he kind of nodded, turned around and did the interview. And it's just kind of like, that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool that the guy is like a legend and he can still do that. And I don't know that you'll ever get to that point, ace of the staff. I get the idea of it, but I'm so simple-minded, Danny, that I like when the ace of the staff is like when Arrieta was going out there and every time he pitched, you're just like, oh my God, he comes off the mound to a point where he's like, he looks like he's 4 feet away and the ball's zipping by people and no one can hit him. That makes more sense to me than appreciating the excellence of Kyle Hendricks when he's on his game.
Well, because it's more normal.
Yeah.
Right? It's more common.
Yeah.
It's rare to be dominant like Kyle Hendricks can be dominant, like Greg Maddux was dominant, right? It was much easier to think of that era and think of Randy Johnson or Roger Clemens or Pedro Martinez, right? There were more guys like that than there were Maddux. Maddux was the outlier, but that's what makes Hendricks special. And it's also what makes him a great postseason pitcher, right? Think about the games that
that's always the argument that when you're not a power pitcher, you struggle in the postseason. That's the argument about Maddux's career because he couldn't overwhelm you. People catch up to you more in the postseason than you would imagine.
Yeah, but I mean, Hendricks has won huge games for the Cubs in the postseason. I mean, the game six against the Dodgers in 16, obviously he gets the start in game seven and had the quick hook from Joe in the World Series. But his mental makeup allows him to be fairly unbelievable. I mean, to hear that guy tell stories or do interviews about postseason starts, he was like, yeah, I mean, I was, I guess, a little bit more nervous. It's like, you're starting game seven of the World Series for the Chicago Cubs, and your heart rate doesn't go up a blip.
All right, let's get a scoreboard update from Michael. We're going to bring in Peter Gammons. We'll talk to Gammo about some of this stuff. I want to ask him about the old school bat flip idea, the new school bat flip idea, just pick his brain a little bit. Danny's got an excellent question for him as well. But first, we will get to Mike Esposito. Michael, bless you, sir. Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score, and Danny Park is kind enough to sit in with us this morning. He is not working this afternoon because the Cubs are playing, and they will begin here at 12:45 on the Score with Zach's pregame, and it's a 1:20 start. And boy, these games are lasting a long time, Danny. I don't know if you're paying attention, but
I certainly have.
They go on and on. And we were talking about that a little bit earlier, but you said something during the break that I got to get to, and we're waiting to hear from Peter Gammons. But you said that you wanted to ask him about Joe, and I got to tell you, like, now that the season has started, and now that the Cubs have kind of turned around from the horrible beginning, I forgot that Joe is operating as a free agent without a contract. I just kind of, I'm like, wow, what are they going to do about Chris Bryant? Wait, you know, Kyle Schwarber, my God. I've lost focus on what is maybe the biggest story that we have going, and that is the future of the manager. And they, let's be honest about it, you look around baseball, and there aren't a lot of these so-called celebrity big money managers left, and Joe's running out of time.
I haven't forgotten because I think it informs everything. Sometimes, yeah. And the Cubs are so transparent, and we're so lucky as the home of the Cubs. You know, Joe's on with Lawrence every week. You hear either Jed Hoyer or Theo Epstein on one of the shows every week. They're a very accessible, big league powerhouse organization. And so they can say all of the right things to kind of build their own narrative. But I always say, like, actions over words. Their actions were not only not extending Joe Maddon, but Theo coming out and saying, we're not going to have discussions about extending Joe Maddon right now. Like, that's not a thing that's going to happen. And then Joe spins his narrative and says, well, why are you calling me a lame duck? I'll just be a free agent. I really think that because of the salaries, because of the celebrity manager, because all things come to an end, I think there's a real scenario where the Cubs win a pennant, the Cubs win a World Series, and they just part ways.
I always took this particular moment with Joe as win or else. You know, October is in March. This is about Joe making sure that you get it all done, and if you do it the way we want it, then we'll sit down and talk about it. And then when Joe opened the new restaurant, I thought, like, oh, okay, so this is going to happen. You know, you don't really open a restaurant and leave, right? But you're right. I mean, the idea that I always thought it was how the team performed, what happened would determine whether he got renewed. But the idea that he could win a World Series and not be brought back, that seems insane to me.
I get it. It seems insane to me, too, and it would be insane in any other sort of normal circumstance, but he's the winningest manager in Cubs history by percentage, right? Modern history,
sure.
Past century. He's the winningest manager in baseball since he's been here, and they allowed him to be a lame duck. So that's pretty unbelievable also. He won 95 games last year.
How old is Joe? Is he the oldest manager in baseball?
He is now the oldest manager in baseball.
Okay.
I think he's just older than Ned Yost.
He's 65 years old. So I think that's one of the things that I was wondering about. And I'm not calling it ageism or anything like that. Just we're getting to a point. Is Joe, does the message still go through him? We've got all these young players. The core is established. Is he getting the most out of everyone? The changes on the staff year after year, it's put a target on Joe. The fact that his contract's running out has put a target on Joe. But once we got into the season, and once he got through the initial stuff, and it was an awful start to the year, and it wasn't like Joe was covering himself in glory, but it also wasn't really Joe's fault. It was the bullpen falling apart, and who put that together, and various issues that had more to do with personnel, if you will, than with the manager. And so I just let that story kind of fall into the back burner, and I thought, I'll worry about that later on, depending on where they wind up. It never occurred to me, Danny, and I find it fascinating that you believe they could win a World Series and still part ways.
Yeah, and it doesn't even mean that I'm advocating for it. I just think based on how they've gone about this, it feels to me exceedingly unlikely that Joe Maddon is the opening day manager of the Cubs next year. Now, obviously, it's most likely if they win a World Series.
Yes.
But I think that they could just argue anything short of that, or even if they get there, like, you know, all good things come to an end. We'll go out on a high note. We'll part ways. And, oh, yeah, by the way, if they win a World Series, they could just get outbid for Joe Maddon.
Really? See, I don't think there's a danger of that happening.
if they don't want him.
I'm saying getting outbid for him, they have all the money in the world. Let's ask Peter Gammons about it. We have Peter Gammons with us now. He joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. Good morning, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Peter, we've been talking about Joe Madden for some reason, mainly because Danny Parkins is sitting in for David this morning, and he believes that even if they win a World Series, this could be the end of the line for Joe with the Cubs. Do you agree with that? I always felt it was kind of playoff run or else, but is there a real possibility that this could be the end of Joe?
You know, to be honest, not to try to dodge, I don't think it's anything we can really know and even adequately speculate about until about August. I mean, there's no question that changes were asked and made, changes on the coaching staff, changes a little bit of the approach. I think they have been made. It'll be very interesting, but I mean, the way the pitching has been in the last week, okay, they're going to hit eventually. They're going to hit pretty well anyway. So, we don't know where we are at this point. I mean, I think that everybody in the division has such questions about them. I worry terribly about the Brewers pitching. The Cardinals are good, but there are some things there that you kind of worry about. And I think that, you know, it's... And Pittsburgh, well, I think their pitching is really good. I do think that they have issues. So, you know, the vision is there for the Cubs. They started to play well or played much better. Now, we're a long way from that. I mean, I just remember, plus, I go back to some to Joe's years, but the way in the second half the Rays played so much better in 2008, when they came from way back of the Red Sox, end up not only finishing ahead of them, but winning the playoffs. And then in 2011, when they were 10 back of the Red Sox on September 1st, and ended up finishing ahead of them, which put Theo in Chicago. His teams have, in the past, played better as the season has gone along. And I think as he gets a further feel for what he has, I do think that the Cubs bullpen will, with all the arms they have, they'll figure it out a lot better. If they win the division, you can't, or make the playoffs, I think it's very hard to say Joe's not coming back. I think one of the things that's interesting, and I've talked to a bunch of people about it, is I realize why it happens. I mean, Ken Rosenthal wrote about it 2 weeks ago, but the speculation about a very small windows of bad starts and is this manager in trouble is amazing. I mean, you look in Washington, Philadelphia, New York, Miami, Atlanta. Every one of those teams, there have been questions raised about are their managers going to survive. I think the same thing will probably happen in the West, although, you know, I can't imagine Bud Black getting fired, but Colorado go up to such a bad start. You say, oh, what's going to happen here? And you've got a bunch of teams in the American League with that same sort of pressure put upon them in Toronto and more important, you know, a couple of teams in the Midwest. I just think that, you know, I want to see exactly where the Cubs are on Labor Day. And then see how they finish September. I think that that's, and plus, you know, I mean, I realize it's been 3 years, but Joe did manage them to a world championship, and I think it took a long time to get there, and I think that that gives him some room to be able to put the team in place the way he wants to put it in place.
Yeah, I wasn't even talking really about the start to this season. I just think, like you said, they didn't extend him. His pitching coach and his hitting coach are not his guys. And there is a clear philosophical difference. Like sometimes Theo will say one thing and then Joe will say something that seems to be in contrast with it. You can speak to this. What main core philosophical differences do you think exist between Theo Epstein and Joe Madden?
I think one is the moving around of players. I think sometimes to get on a long streak, you have to let your basic core players play every day. I think the preparation maybe was something that they at least tried to address together. And I think that you also see, I think maybe a little bit of the, talk everything out. That's one of the things that I think Theo is really good at, is getting people to speak their minds and all be in a, end up in the same place, because they all have the freedom to say, I don't like this. I mean, I know from all his years, one thing that is very clear to people who work for him is he wants people to say, I don't agree with you. He wants contrary opinion. He's always said, essentially, if I want someone to agree with me, I can just look up in the mirror when I'm brushing my teeth in the morning. And I think that the little bit of disagreement, I think he thinks that that is not a bad thing. And in the end, I think that that creates a situation where people do end up on the same page, because they have the right to disagree, and so that they're all sort of, they come to an agreement. Okay, what do we really want together? What's the one thing we want? We want to win. And I think that collaboration, matter of fact, that was a word that a year ago in spring training, I asked Ben Zobrist, how would you describe the Cubs organization? He said collaborative, which I found one of the most interesting answers I've ever gotten from a player. I think they have to find the mutual points in the collaboration, and I think that's something that we may see happen before Memorial Day.
Peter, thanks a ton. We appreciate your time. Have a great Easter, and thanks for everything.
Oh, thank you very much. Okay.
That's Peter Gammons, Hall of Famer, MLB Network, The Atlantic. Very interesting. That's very interesting.
Yeah, I agree that Theo doesn't want yes men.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if, and my suspicion is that the opposite opinion of Joe Maddon is close to wearing out its welcome. I don't think that he feels like he needs a contrary opinion from his manager necessarily. And I think you see that trend around baseball, where managers are getting younger and are more of a direct extension of the front office.
Meatloaf tastes good.
312-644-6767. I think this is fascinating. I loved Peter's answer. I loved your question, Danny, about what is going on between the two. And his answer is fascinating. We'll talk about it next. Mully and Haw, he's Danny Parkins. It's The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.